Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The NBA playoff action is nonstop at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on any team to win and get $150 in free bets if they do. With DraftKings same-game parlays, you can turn a small bet into a big payday. Create your own parlay by combining multiple bets like which team will win, total threes made, total rebounds, and more. And boom, you have a shot for an even bigger payout. Right now, all customers can place a same-game parlay with three or more legs and get a free bet back up to $25 if one leg doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code FORGOTTENSEASONS. Bet just $5 on any NBA team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. That's promo code FORGOTTENSEASONS only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Welcome back to another episode of Forgotten Seasons. Today, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. If you were following last week, you might have saw that we launched a Next 75 project. Everybody that's involved at Showtime Basketball just feels like there's so many players that didn't make the NBA 75 list that deserve the same shine and recognition. And I think that, in general, real basketball fans feel that same way. A lot of the players that didn't make the 75 list are the players that are really the backbone of Forgotten Seasons. This week, we had the great Penny Hardaway join Matt and Stack to run through the 20 players from the 90s that were selected to the Next 75 list. I think without any surprise, Penny is one of those players. I mean, when you look at his run in Orlando, what he was able to do, revolutionize the point guard position, led the Magic along with Shaq to the finals in his second year, past MJ's Bulls in the East. Outside of the 75 list, they also talked about 90s hoops in general, talked about Penny's signature shoe line. Anytime when you can pick the brain of Penny Hardaway, I think you want to listen. So I'm going to say peace and let you guys listen to Matt and Stack chop it up with Penny on the 1990s Next 75. We did the 1980s with John Sally last week. You can check that out on the Showtime Basketball YouTube page. It is in last week's episode of What's Burning. Hope you guys enjoy. Make sure to leave some feedback on the Instagram, how you feel about this Next 75 project. I've had a blast being a part of it, and I hope you guys like it. So let's get into this now. Penny Hardaway Next 75 talk begins right now.
Welcome back to What's Burning Next 75 list. Man, today I'm excited about this because we grew up watching this era. We're going to talk about 90s basketball. It was a lot different back then, and one of the best players to ever do it in that era. None other than our brother, Penny Hardaway. Penny, welcome back to the show, man.
Man, yeah, thanks for having me back, man.
The ageless one.
Yes, I'm saying, Jack. Have they given you gray hairs out there yet?
Yeah.
Memphis?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I'm just hiding them right now.
Well, Penny, what we're doing here is we're doing the Next 75 list. Guys that missed the cut for whatever reason, but still were tremendous players in the league. When you first saw the 75 list, obviously respect to everyone who made it. Anytime you try to make a list like this in a league that's been so amazing, there's going to be controversial. What were your thoughts when you first saw the 75 list?
Honestly, I was like, I should be on that list. In my mind, I'm like, hey,
of course,
I should be on that list. It's just initially what you say when you're a baller and you're like, hey, I should be on that list. I understand the injuries derail me. I'm not in the Hall of Fame. But at the end of the day, my numbers speak for themselves in my first six, 7 years. So at the end of the day, I said that. But then I also respect everybody on that list. You know, just sitting there watching those guys, man, it's just an amazement because I'm a huge basketball historian. I know everyone that played that was on that 75. I watched some type of film or a clip or something on them from their heyday. And I had nothing but love and respect for every guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be the one to say it. If they had the top 75 and they all walked on the street on trash day, a lot of them would jump in the trash truck. I just got to say it. A lot of them would jump in the back and keep on moving because, hey, I say it. A lot of them wasn't good to me.
Well, I just think, I think obviously, you know, we have respect for everyone, but I think we need to, you know, decide, you know, who was, you know, people who were kind of pioneers in the space and helped develop, you know, the NBA to what it is today, because they also, they definitely deserve their respect, but that doesn't necessarily make them a top 75 type players, because there's players back in the day that, you know, like you say, and we say this with all due respect, the game is just so different from it was back then. Like, they would get run off the court these days. You know, some guy's dribbling with one hand and he's set shots. And, you know, the game is so far past what it started as. And obviously, you want to pay homage to those type of pioneers, but that doesn't necessarily make them a top 75 to ever play this game. So that was kind of my, you know, beef, trying to keep it as respectful as possible, because, you know, you make the list, you make the list. But there was a lot of snubs that can really obviously play. And shit, you come to mind as definitely one of the first people who got snubbed out of that top 75 list.
Penny Hardaway, Vince Carter is not on the list. Burn it all.
Right. I know, obviously, the job keeps you busy. Are you able to keep up with the playoffs and what's going on in the league right now?
Yeah, I'm definitely keeping up with the playoffs right now. It's a lot going on, a lot of good basketball being played, and I'm definitely hyped watching this these series that have been going on.
Your boy J-Kid, you was a backcourt mate with him. Y'all led the Mavs to ass whooping against the Suns. J-Kid just led the Mavs, to the ass whooping against the Suns, but y'all was played together in Phoenix. He was your backcourt mate for a few years. What do you think he's telling Luka for Luka to go out there and do what he's doing right now?
He probably just telling Luka, keep doing what you're doing, man. You're dominating the game on all levels. You know, J-Kid was an all-around player. He's a triple-double guy. So, you know, he's basically telling Luka, man, just keep doing what you're doing. Keep getting guys involved when you have to get involved. Take over the game when you have to take over. Keep competing at the highest level. It gets harder on every level. Just keep that in mind and always ask questions. If you have any questions, man, ask me. I've been there. That's what he's saying to Luka.
You surprised that he's becoming a great coach?
No. I'm not surprised that J-Kid is becoming a great coach, because he's such a fierce competitor, man. That dude was just a silent assassin. And he, believe me, he remembers being traded from Phoenix. That was like a chip on his shoulders, even though he still loves the organization. You know how we do. Y'all traded me back a long time ago. I haven't forgotten that, and I want to beat y'all's ass. So he was on that this series, I guarantee you.
Yeah.
Before we get into the next 75 talk, paint a picture of what the league was like in 93. Outside of obviously MJ and Scotty, who were some of the tougher teams and players when you first really started getting your footing in the league?
West Coast, it was Seattle with Gary Payton and Sean Kemp and those guys. Golden State, when they had Tim, Mitch, and Chris, you know, the TMC.
Run TMC.
Then they got Sprewell and Chris Webber when I came in. So Utah, obviously, with Karl Malone and John Stockton. Those were the tougher teams in the league, for sure.
The league is so young these days. It continues to get younger and younger. What was it like for you as a 21-year-old early in the 90s off the court? What was that life like?
You know, me, I was a homebody, bro, so I didn't really go a lot of places, so it was easy for me to kind of – now, if I would have had social media, there's no telling where I would have been, bro. But back in the 90s, everything was chill, man. You just kind of, you know, went to eat, went to the movies back home. That's a homebody. It wasn't really much to do, especially in Orlando. Orlando was a family town.
Right.
I was blessed to go to the Magic as well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's definitely a family town. I remember my little brief stint out there. It was nothing but family. But, yeah, social media is a cheat code these days, boy. These guys don't know how good they got it.
Right.
I'm telling you.
All right, man. Well, let's get started right now. Someone who I firmly believe – You and Grant Hill are people that I feel like obviously got robbed of longevity and the ability to be, I think both you guys would have been two of the greatest players to ever live if injuries didn't derail your path. But let's first talk about Grant Hill. He had a 3-year peak where he was at 21-9-7. Talk to us about G Hill and how tough he was when he was rolling.
G Hill, monster. Like you said, 21-9-7 average. He's a guy that, at his height and his size, man, was a matchup problem every single night. And the one thing I respect about G is he had to play against his matchup every night. We had to earn our points because you didn't play against the five man. You know, it wasn't switching everything. It was trapping you. It was a hard show and get back. You played your matchup. So whatever you got back then, you earned that shit. I ain't saying that you ain't earning it now, But you played your matchup. If you played the Bulls, you played MJ and Scottie the whole night. They played you, you played them. That's you know, you played Sacramento, you played Mitch Richmond, he played you. You played Indiana, you played Reggie Miller. You didn't have a five-man playing you. So G. Hill, in that era, man, playing against all those threes, was dominant, bro, and he was smooth doing it.
Hall of Famer, seven-time All-Star, All-NBA five times, Rookie of the Year, 94-95. So he's someone you would definitely put on that next 75 list?
Yeah, for sure, easily. You know, he's a guy that definitely, arguably, if you take his top 5 years and compare it to anybody that's in the Hall of Fame that's like above him or in the top 75, I think his top 5 years, you know, are like no other. Like they're second to none. Yeah, they're right there.
Facts. Next up, we got Glenn Rice.
Ooh.
3 year peak, 24 points per game, 44% from the three, 15 year pro. He was a killer in Miami and Charlotte, started every game in the Lakers 2000 title run. 18K career points. Talk to me about Glenn Rice.
Man, just a dog. A guy that just, he was a shooter, but he was tough. You know, most shooters, they're just not going to grind it. G was tough. He was going to play D. He was going to try to fight. He was going to knock down shots. And when they talk about shooters, man, I can't believe you can't have Glenn Rice in there. Glenn Rice is one of the best shooters I've ever seen, man. That dude could get it done. Definitely, like, one of the best shooters I've seen.
Three-time All-Star, 2000 NBA champ, two-time All-NBA, 1989, 90 All-Rookie, 1996-97 All-Star MVP.
Yeah, I was part of that All-Star MVP. G should be giving me something by now, man. He ain't never give me nothing for that, man. I was giving him all them dimes, Stat.
He was feeding him. I was feeding him, man.
Yeah. And I had MJ on my team, so I said, you know, MJ, I looked at MJ, I said, man, G got it going, man. We got to roll with him. And G got hot. Mm. Got the MVP.
Next up, Alonzo Mourning. Zoe, 15-year pro at his peak three-year run. He was 20 points, 10 rebounds, 3 blocks, 99 and 2000 Defensive Player of the Year. Averaged at least 19 and 9 for 8 seasons. Hall of Famer, 7-time All-Star, block champ, 2006 NBA champ, 2-time All-NBA. The accolades continue. 2-time All-Defense, 2-time Defense Player of the Year. Talk to us about Zoe, because he played in an era where there was real, real big that he saw every single night.
And you said those numbers, 19 and I think 19 and 9 or something like that for nine years in a row or whatever. Come on, bro. Playing against Dream, playing against Pat, playing against the Admiral, playing against Shaq. Those matchups.
Yeah.
Shaq, Sabonis, all these bigs around the league back then when bigs were the shit, when bigs were like it in the league.
And to be able to do that, bro,
he was a warrior. He was a warrior, man. That dude just, man, played injured. Played through everything and competed his butt off every single night. Definitely was somebody that should have been worthy of a top 75.
It's not
like I'm just kissing everybody's ass from my era, but when you're seeing these dudes have to go out there and get it out of the mud, nothing was given to them at all.
Absolutely.
Not in that era. Dikembe Mutombo, 3 year peak, 12 points per game, 12 rebounds per game, 4 blocks per game. One of only 2 players to win Defensive Player of the Year 4 times, him and Ben Wallace. Made an All-Star game with 3 different teams, Atlanta, Denver, and Philly. Hall of Fame, of course. 8-time All-Star, 3-time block champ, 1991-92 All-Rookie team, 4-time Defensive Player of the Year, 6-time All-Defense, 3-time All-NBA.
Dikembe is one of the very few guys, you can only have a handful of guys, that could beat you without scoring. He can control the whole game with just protecting the rim and rebounding. And that's priceless, man. You know, you put him in the same boat with a Dennis Rodman. You put him in that same era like with Ben Wallace. Mm-hmm. This guy just dominated, man. He was not – he took pride in what he did. He didn't care if he scored a point as long as he got 5-6 blocks, 15, 16, 17 rebounds. And he was going to bring that every night. That's something that he was going to bring to the table every single night.
That's a fun kind of, I mean, as a guard, that's the kind of big you would love, right? You know what I mean? He's going to hold down the defense, and I still get to shoot up all the shots. I mean, as a guard, I'm sure people love playing with Dikembe. All he cared about with them blocks and rebounds, that's a beautiful thing for guards.
I don't see how Rodman making it and he don't make it, bro. I really don't. That was a good comparison.
I think Rodman is unbelievable, and, man, was phenomenal at what he did. Didn't have to score, defended and dominated. I think Deke is on that level, man, when it comes to defense and rebounds.
Definitely.
Next up, someone I really respected and loved coming up, Rod Strickland. His three-year peak was 17, 10,
Kyrie.
And 5. He averaged at least 7 assists for 10 straight years, 17-year pro, number 13 all-time on the assist list, 97-98 NBA All-Star, 88-89 All-Rookie team. Talk to us about how cold Ross Stricklin was, and that was a great comparison. Obviously, you know, godfather to Kyrie, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But just a killer back in his day.
Ridiculous, man. Just so smooth. Had all the different finishes. He was Kyrie back in the day, for sure. Had the nastiest hezzy. Nastiest hezzy. He wasn't going to even shoot it, but he made you believe that shit, that he was going to shoot it. That's how nice he was. He'd hezzy your ass and be by you, and he'd look back like, yeah, nigga, you know what it is, all game. This is it, all game. He was nasty, dog. Yeah. He was. He was like, really, he was ahead of his time because he was this era type of guard. Like, he was doing his thing back then, but he's nasty. Big guard. Man could just come to the game nonchalant and just give you buckets and dimes the whole game. Crafty, very crafty.
How tall was he? He's like 6'3", 6'4", or smaller than that?
No, about 6'4".
Okay, that's what I thought.
Next up, Tim Hardaway, 3-year peak, 22 points per game. Mr. Texas two-step, 10 assists per game. Killed for an entire decade with Run TMC, of course, in the 90s and with the Heat. Hall of Fame, five-time All-Star, five-time All-NBA, 1989-90 All-Rookie Team. The Mr. Texas two-step, Tim Hardaway.
I'm going to tell you something about that cat. He had fear in the league when he was going through a stretch. Watching him play, this dude had fear. In his prime, he had fear in the league. Mm. That crossover was what it was. It was deadly. It was nasty. It couldn't be stopped. And sometimes he just do it just to be doing it. Just to let you know, I'm about to give it to you again. You know what I mean? Right. That he could. Honestly, he was one of the few guards to me that put fear in the league. When you knew he was coming to town, you had to get your sleep. Because he was that Chicago toughness. He was relentless. He wanted to dog you, and he wanted to embarrass you. He had that mentality.
Young Timmy. One of the better European players to grace the NBA stage, Drazen Petrovic. His two-year peak, 21 points a game, 45% from the three-point line back when they wasn't really shooting threes like that. Made All-NBA in 93. Unfortunately, passed away the following summer. Hall of Famer. Talk to us what kind of game that Drazen had when he came to the league.
Major. Major game. He could shoot threes. He could get by you. He was tough. He took tough shots, made tough shots. It was all about his energy, though. He was high energy for the entire game. He didn't let up one time. He was in kill mode the entire time. Every time he got the ball, he was ready to attack. He could shoot it. He could finish. He could do it all, man. He was very nice. Very nice player.
Next up, we got Money Mitch Richmond.
West Coast Jordan.
Yeah, West Coast Jordan. We were just talking about him. 3-year peak, 24 points per game, 4 assists per game, 41% from three, 20K career points. Made All-NBA team 5 years straight. Hall of Fame, of course. Six-time NBA All-Star. 2002 NBA champ. Five-time All-NBA. 1988-89 All-Rookie Team. 1994-95 All-Star MVP. 1988-89 Rookie of the Year. And he not in the top 75. This is crazy.
Come on, man. West Coast Jordan, man, that speaks for itself. When you get that title, you know you're getting buckets. He can go, before the game started, he can walk up to the scores table and say, put 25 on there. And then, I'm just telling you, he can go to the scores table and like, put 25. He's going to get that no matter what you do. Fundamentals, triple threat, just played out a triple threat a lot, could shoot it, you know, could post you. Just was smooth, man, but he was going to get his buckets. Mm-hmm. You weren't stopping him from getting 20, 25.
And he played defense. I remember Michael Jordan saying he was one of the tougher guys that guarded him. You know, Mitch used to lock up. I remember, obviously being from Sac, watching him coming up, just what he would do on both ends of the ball, man, with not much help.
Oh, yeah, and get it done nightly.
Yeah. Next up, someone I really look up to, obviously didn't have huge numbers, but still did put up nice numbers throughout his career, but one of the only players in the modern era was 7 NBA championships. Robert Horry, you know, stretch four, three man in Houston, hit big shots, but 7-time NBA champ, all rookie, 92-93.
I call him Mr. You gotta have him. You gotta have him on your team. That's what I call him, man. I don't give a damn. Like, this dude made so many big shots. He just had an IQ that was out of this world. He knew who he was. He didn't never try to be anybody else outside of who he was. Tough defender, took on a lot. Guarding the other team's best players, and man, spread that floor. Might go down in history as one of the top guys, top two or three guys that ever spaced their floor. You couldn't leave them, especially when the game was on the line. At 6'10".
Shot by. Yeah, right.
Think about 6'10". That. At 6'10". Perfect teammate from the point of view of he would get on the star player's ass. He wasn't scared to speak up. He was a pure winner. He was a total team guy. And he just, the IQ understood, he just helped everybody else on the floor while he was out there. You can just tell he was just a floor general from that point of view. He never had to be the best player, but he was always one of the most important.
This next guy, man, was special not only for me, but for the world. He's from Texas. This three-year peak, 20 points per game, 9 rebounds per game, 4 assists per game, was the number one pick in 1990. Big cultural influence with Grandma Ma, two-time All-Star, 91-92 All-Rookie, 91-92 Rookie of the Year, 92-93 All-NBA. Larry Johnson.
Grandma Ma.
Yeah, did he influence Lil Penny at all?
Hell yeah, because he did it before me. You know, that's how cold dude was, man. If you wasn't a fan of Larry Johnson at UNLV, right. You just wasn't a fan of basketball. Right. Dude ripped, chiseled, could stretch gold it out tooth. To three. The gold tooth with the part down the middle. I mean, tough, great Mike teammate, Tyson. Skilled. He just, man, with his size, the way that he can move, his toughness, his willingness to just be a great teammate. It didn't always have to be about him. He had to share the spotlight with, you know, Alonzo and those guys, man. And just, to me, was just a perfect teammate. Went to New York, did the same thing. Stayed around a long time because of his professionalism. But as a ball player, man, that dude was a stereotypical basketball player. Guy you want riding with you. You want in the foxhole with you. You knew he was ready at all times. LJ, his name is not mentioned enough.
Another guy out from my way, his three-year peak, 22-11, one of six players to ever average 20-10 three or more times, along with Magic Johnson, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Isaiah Thomas, and Oscar Robinson. Three-time All-Star, five-time All-NBA, most improved 88-89 season, Kevin Johnson.
KJ had fearing people, too. I talk about Tim Hardaway. But when you had to play Kevin Johnson, man, KJ wasn't a trash talker. He just knew he was good. He just, like, worked on his game. He had a little skip cross, or that little skip that he went into. Unstoppable, man. He could shoot the midi. He wasn't a big three-point shooter, but he could make them. But, man, he could finish. He could do everything, man. That was one of my favorite teammates. I got a chance to play with him 1 year. And, man, he just taught me so much about being a professional, giving me books all the time just to, you know, to keep my knowledge strong. Obviously, becoming a mayor, true professional, was able to do his job and not have an ego on helping everybody else do theirs at a high level. Mm-hmm. Had fear in the league.
Next guy, I kind of was like a little bit for the way I played with passion. He had a three-year peak of 20 points per game, 4 assists per game, 4 rebounds per game, 5 seasons with 40-plus minutes per game. Only 4 players in the 90s made first-team All-NBA in their rookie and sophomore season. Sprewell, you, Tim Duncan, and David Robinson, four-time All-Star, 1992-93 All-Rookie Team, 1993 All-Defense, 1993-94 All-NBA. Latrell Sprewell.
Spree was my dog. Man, Spree's just going to compete, man. He just kind of kept the chip on his shoulders because it felt like to him he wasn't getting his just due. So every night he went out, man, he was on the list. It was like Remy. He was Remy.
Like Remy.
He had the list, dog.
He had his hit that list.
He had the hit list. He's like, dude, if you're supposed to be better than me, I got you. You're supposed to be better than me, I got you. On a nightly basis, he was showing the league, I'm that dude. I know everybody in my position is going to be ranked way ahead of me, but watch my numbers when I play them. That was Spree.
Took that shit personal.
He did. It was personal every single night.
Yeah.
He played with that passion like Jack said, like Stack said. They played with that passion like that chip. You could tell Stack played with that chip. He played with that chip as well.
Next up, Sean Kemp, three-year peak, 19-11, 2 blocks and a steal and a half. 15,000 career points, 6-time All-Star, 3-time All-NBA. The Rain Man.
Man, coming out of high school, athletic freak. To me, went to the perfect franchise with Gary Payton. They both acted a fool together. Sean Kemp, man, he couldn't be stopped. They couldn't stop Sean Kemp, bro. He was a matchup problem for everybody because he was faster than a big. He was bigger than somebody smaller. He was athletic. He could finish. He even stressed his jump shot out to about 17, 18. He didn't shoot threes or whatever, but he could block your shot and then finish the break with a dunk. Guard you 94 feet up the floor. He was as fast as a guard, and he could jump higher than you. He's a freak of nature.
He's a freak. Man.
He was kind of like a LeBron without the handles, man, because he was a matchup problem. He was fast. He can get up and down that floor. He could take off. You know, he didn't have the playmaking ability LeBron had or the ball handling, but as far as the freakish nature of their size and how fast they were and how they could dominate the game just from going coast to coast.
Problem.
Problem child.
Like Greek freak.
And GP used to put that octane in them.
No, no question.
The whole game. That's all he needed. GP to talk crazy and get him locked in.
Yeah, GP can do that. Next guy, 3-year peak, 26 points per game, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, just under 18K career points, 5 straight seasons with 25 points per game from 89 to 93. Hall of Famer, 5-time All-Star, 4-time All-NBA. One of my homeboys, he was with the Warriors when we was there, Chris Mullin.
Oh, Mully, come on, man. Mully was not athletic, could handle it good enough to get space. All he needed was space, and your ass was – he was like my boy said, he was shooting your face off. He was so smooth, man. It's just – I just remember watching Mully at St. John's just battle against everybody, and he wasn't no punk. He was tough. So to be able to come out on a nightly basis in that era to play against all those athletes and all that toughness and still be able to get yours at a high level, and you weren't going to beat anybody off speed – you weren't going to beat anybody off athleticism. You just had to get the space. Man, Mully was nasty, man. Mm. Very nasty. Mm.
Lefty. Lucky lefty. Next up, I'm not sure if you got a chance to play against him. Reggie Lewis, 3-year peak, 20 points, 5 rebounds a game, averaged 28 points a game in the 92 playoffs. We had Muggsy on the show a few weeks ago. He said he used to really give MJ problems. Unfortunately, passed away in 93. One-time All-Star under his belt. Tell us what you know about Reggie Lewis.
I didn't play against Reggie, but I know a lot about Reggie. You know, I followed him from the Baltimore days in high school, into college, and into the NBA, and was just freakish, man. Like, he was a defender. He was long. He could score on 3 levels. He could push it. He could post you. He could get around you. He went to a great franchise, obviously, with the Celtics that allowed him to showcase his game with some other great players, but was nasty, man. He was another guy that gave the league problems.
Can you compare him to anybody, Penny, off the top of your head?
Who could I compare Reggie to? Because he was kind of his own style player, but I think he just had a style of his own. I can't think of anybody that was like Reggie. I'm sure I could if I just got off this call and was like, okay, I could have compared it to this person or that person. But he was long, he was fast, he was athletic, he did it on both ends. Two-way player.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Next up, 3-year peak, 18 points per game, 7 rebounds per game, 4 assists per game, 15K career points. 2-time Sixth Man of the Year, one of the best Sixth Man ever, 3-time All-Star, 1994 All-NBA. Deadlift Shrimp.
Yeah, Deadlift was a problem, man. He just knew how to play. His IQ took him over the hump. Wasn't crazy athletic, wasn't fast. Basically, was the Charles Barkley before Charles. He walking you down. He getting you down to that, but he making plays out of the post. You know, he was a guy that he could score it or he could make plays out of the post. High IQ, knew the game. Defensively, just was tough enough not to let you beat him up. You know what I mean? He was just smart, man. He was one of those problems. When he came on the court, his plus minuses, he was always going to be on the plus side because he knew how to move the ball. He knew how to get to his areas to get a shot. And he was a good teammate, man. He was just one of those guys that was a problem for the other team, man. It was hard to get ready to play against him because he's 6'11", 6'10", 6'11".
Yeah,
and you had to put a big on him. And he was like a guard skill.
Mm-hmm. Dead left. Next up, Steve Smith, 3-year peak, 19-4-4. Had great runs, obviously, with the Hawks, Miami, and Portland. One-time All-Star, 2003 NBA champ, 91-92 All-Rookie team. You ever get hit with the Schmitty?
I knew the Schmitty was coming because he was one of my favorite players, so I didn't get hit with it. I knew when he was about to do it. So when he got sideways, I just bagged up and said, you're going to have to take that because I didn't get hit me with that.
Right.
But Schmitty, one of my all-time favorite players, man. When he was at Michigan State, humongous fan of Schmitty. So when he went into the league, watched him get drafted by Miami, he got hurt early, which – man, just really made me sad, but dude, I got a chance to. He was in Miami when I went to Orlando. Just nasty, man. Just very tough. Get to his spots, post you up, was smooth, wasn't crazy athletic, but could fool you every now and then with some athleticism. Smart enough on defense to not let you, you know, beat him off the first dribble or second dribble. And just kind of, man, just was my type of dude, man. Just was a winner. He was tough, he could shoot. Mitty, post up. He was one of the best post up guards in the league.
Ever, by far. I always say that. That's who taught me in 2003. He was like, you can shoot threes. If you get your post game, you're going to last a long time in this league. And his post game was unbelievable, bro.
Crazy. Real crafty. Knew how to just use momentum, get to that rack.
Next guy, 3-year peak, 17 points per game, 5 rebounds per game, 4 assists per game. He played a huge role in the Suns' trip to the 1993 finals. Averaged 15-6-4 and played 45 minutes per game in the 1993 playoffs. 3-time All-Star, 2-time All-Defensive team. Dan Majerle. He was tough.
Thunder Dan was tough, bro. He had to take on the assignment of guarding all the other team's best players. Mm-hmm. And you already know, when you're in the league, he was athletic enough. When Dan first came in the league, he was Thunder Dan. He was getting up, dunking everybody. He was dunking everything. Mm-hmm. The thing that I respected about him is that when his athleticism left, he still figured out a way to still guard the other team's best players. He wasn't jumping as high. He was just tough enough to just fight you, contest every shot, and would knock down big threes on a nightly basis. Mm-hmm. He was definitely somebody that I enjoyed watching, man, because he was going to – you didn't have to worry about him
competing.
He was going to compete every single night.
Man, next up, one of my favorite players, someone who did so much for the game, revolutionized the point guard position, 3-year peak, 21, 7 assists, 4 rebounds, 4-time All-Star, 3-time All-NBA, 93, 94, All-Rookie team, none other than yourself.
Yeah, man, he was all right, man. You know, some nights, no. But
just talk to us about, like I said, you came in and really changed the point guard position. You know what I mean? Obviously, Magic came before you, but you came with that size, that athleticism, mid-range, three-pointer, post, get to the basket. Like you said, your seven-year run, you could put that up against anybody's to ever play this game. But how much fun were you having in revolutionizing the game at the same time?
Yeah, first of all, you know, I got to give a lot of that credit to Magic, because Magic was my guy. Even though I was more athletic than him, I grew up watching that style, that Showtime style. So that's what I took into the league. Everything that I watched him do, everything that I learned about the game, about giving up assists, I wasn't really a hardcore scorer. I wasn't going to go at your throat because I had Shaq. I had other guys around me. I was more of the guy like Bron. I was going to make everybody better. I didn't have the Kobe mentality to come in and be like, I'm just going to try to go for 50. I felt like I was going to get 20 falling off a log just from just my talent and just God-given right. ability. But I knew I had to make everybody else better. So coming in, man, I was trying to take that Lakers style into Orlando. Showtime, make Dennis Scott better, make Nick Anderson better, make Horace Grant better, make Shaq better, but still be able to take over the games whenever I needed to. And it was fun, man, because I felt like I had one of the best teams and never won a ring. And it's sad to say, because I was part of that unbelievable group of guys that we never got over the hump, but I had a ton of fun, man, playing with those guys.
Hey, I got a quick question. You so recently, probably the last couple months, it's been a move that you made in the game.
Oh, yeah.
That's all over social media. Let me ask you this question: was it a move you worked on, or that just happened out of instinct? And I'm talking about the spin step back three. Mm-hmm. It's all over social media.
It was instinct. You got to understand. Instinct. Like I never worked on that move, and I never did that move again. I can't even remember.
I said that ever again.
It was one of one, one of one. And the only reason why I did it is because the Miami Heat were an unbelievable defensive team. And Keith Askins was one of the better defenders in the NBA. And I knew Keith Askins was going to go for it. If you raise your eyebrows, he was going to raise up. He was, like, intense, bro. He was intense. So I knew if I hit him with a half spin, he was going to go for the spin. And I had already kind of knew I was going to do the step back. But that move was one of one, never done ever again in my career. It was just instinctual to get him off me, to separate from it, and then shoot it. So that was just an instinct to play.
That goes to show you before your time, dog. You know what I'm saying? Kids are actually trying to add these moves in their game now, like actually doing them in games. You was before your time, bro.
30 years
later. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. That's crazy, though. I'm seeing that.
One of one. Man, before
we get out of
here. Yeah, Luka hit one just the other
last
day.
Last game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hit the spin, step back.
Yep. Man, before we get out of here, we want to talk a little bit about 90s kicks. Obviously, your shoes were iconic. Some of the shoes you wore iconic. What was the basketball sneaker game like back in the 90s?
The sneaker game was strong, man, because, you know, that's when Nike was just pouring out everything. There wasn't a limit on any money. There wasn't any kind of pandemic. There wasn't any kind of shortage. It was like shoes everywhere, bro. So for me, the sneaker game was at the high. It's high now, but it's because of retro sneakers, but my sneakers, the Jays, I mean, even like Sprewell brought his shoes out with the spinners. Shaq had his shoe. Patrick Ewing had his shoe. David Robinson had a shoe. Chris Webber had a shoe. It was like everybody back then had sneakers, man, and it was crazy. Charles Barkley, Scottie Pippen came along later. So I think that the sneaker game was very strong back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. What is it like when you see your shoes getting re-released nearly 30 years after you brought him to the world and still people go crazy over him?
It's kind of weird, man, to be honest with you, but it's a blessing because we're all sneakerheads. I know I'm a sneakerhead. You just wanted to wear sneakers and then to have your own with your own logo is a crazy moment, man. I'm thankful for him, you know, the man up above to be able to bless me with that and just to see them being re-released and then still selling out. And I haven't played ball in a long time and to have that respect from the sneaker world is unbelievable.
What's the backstory behind the foam posits? Were they originally designed for somebody else?
They talked about that they originally asked Scottie Pippen if he wanted the foam posit. I never heard that story from the people that brought it to me. But yeah. I do know that they had a foam posit one, and then they had the foam posit, the one with the swish on the side that Tim Duncan was wearing for a while. But the original foam, to me, was brought to me to wear in the game. If it was Scottie's before, I never heard of that, but they brought that idea to me, and I loved the foam immediately because I knew it was something that was different. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that it was going to be so relevant clean. Now, shoot. But I wanted it, man, because I knew it was different from what anybody else had had.
Them blue that shit looked like the Nerf. Remember the Nerf Turbo footballs? That's what that just remind me. Yeah, I could never afford them, but they look good on y'all boys.
them blue ones was fire.
Cold to this day. That's what I'm saying. The shit's cold to this day. Outside of your own line, give us your top five hoop shoes from the 90s.
Oh, wow. I would say one of the lines definitely was, you know, the J's, the Jordans for sure. What else was top five? Because I'm in the Nike family. I mean, I didn't really rock with anything outside of the Nike family, so.
They got the best shoes anyway, so you good.
it was just basically my line, MJ's line.
I liked Barclays.
Barclays line really, was good. Yeah, the Force Force was good. GP, when he brought out the glove. That glove was tough. I kind of like wearing the gloves. I was more of a Force One guy. So any of the dunks, the Force One and the dunks, man, were nice too.
And they still relevant.
Yeah.
The Lil Penny advertising with Chris Rock. What's the story behind that? And what's your favorite? There's two questions. And what's your favorite Lil Penny ad?
So what happened with the Chris Rock situation, Chris Rock was like one of the last comedians, not because he wasn't worthy. It's because they went after Damon Wayans. They went after Martin Lawrence, you know, because these guys were heavy hitters at that time. Chris Rock wasn't really Chris Rock at the time that the sneaker came out and Lil Penny came out. So Chris Rock was like, yeah, I'll do it. But it was more like they asked Damon Wayans, they asked Martin Lawrence and those guys, and they declined. Like, I don't know how big that would be. And Chris Rock took on the role. And we were never there together. He did the voiceover. And obviously, it hit big. Chris Rock was definitely a funny comedian. But when the Lil Penny ads happened, you know, it definitely made both of us more popular. My favorite Lil Penny ad is probably when we were in the Memphis Pros uniforms. And we were doing I saved Lil Penny from the burning building. We were in the Memphis Pros uniform, and he was out on the court playing ball with me. Yeah. And he was like, the Secret Service couldn't guard me, all of that stuff. Yeah, that commercial was pretty dope.
You know, and obviously with all due respect to the other comedians that passed on it, I don't think they could have gave Lil Penny the just he needed because it was his voice that made him dope.
Yes.
Chris Rock's voice and what made Lil Penny's voice is what made Lil Penny so dope to me.
Absolutely. Chris Rock took that Lil Penny to the highest level that it could have gone to. Because obviously we love Martin, we love Damon Wayans, but his voice did make Lil Penny because his of voice, being a puppet. Yeah.
Shout out Chris Rock. What would you think that, what would you think if someone brought, one of these young stars brought their version of Lil Penny out, like a John Moran or something like that? What would you think if, you know, they kind of reinvent Lil Penny and made him like Lil Morant or whatever they want to call it? What would you think of that?
I think that'd be tough because, you know, for me, I was quiet, almost like a silent assassin, and Lil Penny was my mouthpiece.
Alter ego.
You know, he was the alter ego. He was the guy that was going to talk shit for me and, all right, my man going to get y'all. I'm going to do all the talking, but my man going to get y'all, right?
Right.
And with Ja is that guy that's going to talk shit, so maybe an alter ego might be the laid back, the one that needs to go to the, you know, go to the interviews and be like, and answer everything on the political side, y'all gonna be like, no, I ain't say that shit. He be like, oh, I got it, bro. I got us. Maybe that'll, because y'all gonna tell you how he feel.
Right.
And maybe
right.
an alter ego do the opposite of that and be like, everything political.
The cool.
I think
like
that'd be dope.
Yeah. Hey, Nike's gonna hear this, so we'll see what happens.
No doubt.
Well, Penny, man, we appreciate your time helping us talk through the 1990s. We wish you nothing but the best of luck continuing over at Memphis and look forward to catching up with you soon, man. Thanks for you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, man. And what I want to say to you and Stack, man, I appreciate you guys for standing up for the culture. Y'all do it big, man. It take big balls to do that because, you know, everybody else is going to think what they want to think and not say. But I appreciate what y'all do for the culture, bro. Seriously, both of y'all.
Thank you, man. We appreciate it. Love you,
bro.
Too.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
No doubt.